Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, August the 24th, 2012, and if you can believe, I've been away from the show for 6 weeks, and I'm glad to be back. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Alyssa Ray.
Hi, Alyssa.
And my guest co-host, Denise Swanson, plus my whole family, my mom, dad, and sister. Do you want to say hello?
Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Welcome, everyone. Okay, so Animal Voices is Vancouver's and Western Canada's only animal advocacy and vegan radio program, bringing you all the animal and vegan-related news, events, interviews, lifestyle, and commentary you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and internationally. We at Animal Voices encourage the movement toward a world in which animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the same rights that humans take for granted. This program can be heard every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and is also streamed live at cooperadio.org and available as podcasts on iTunes and animalvoices.org after airing. Today's show is the TAFA and AR Conference Reports Show. As our listeners will know, I was on my summer vegan vacation with Denise, and it took Denise and I to the Taking Action for Animals Conference in Washington, D.C., as well as the Animal Rights Conference right after that, nearby in Alexandria, Virginia. For our first segment today, Denise and I will be presenting a review of our experiences at the conferences, which I think are significant knowledge and skill building events to attend for people who want to make a positive difference for the animals. So we'll let you know what was there and what we thought of it. And then first, our main segment today, we don't have an interview. We're trying something different for today, but rather I wanted to bring back to our listeners a taste of what you would have experienced if you had attended TAFA and AR, since obviously not everyone who wants to go can attend. So we'll be presenting some audio clips of talks given by presenters and animal rights advocates Kathy Freston, Jane Velez Mitchell, and Peter Hammerstedt, and we'll be discussing them as well. Before we move on, I must mention, if you didn't know already, that CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio, is changing channel frequencies in a couple of weeks. We are swapping frequencies with 100.5 FM, and this swap will occur on Monday, September 10th. So as of then, you won't find us at 102.7 FM, but you will find us at 100.5 FM, so please keep that in mind. Our control room tech trainee, Tim Aretz, is absent from the show today because he's busy preparing for a new project that he's putting together with Alyssa called Plate Invaders, and Alyssa would like to chat with us about that.
Yeah, so let's see. Well, the city, has a pretty rich underground vegan scene that sort of sprouted up maybe a couple years ago, actually, at my house. The vegan secret supper was started in Vancouver by Chef Merida Anderson. That was my roommate at the time, and she's since moved on. She's still doing her suppers in Brooklyn. That's where she lives now. I actually just went to her last supper here in Vancouver, her only one for 2012, was last weekend, and it was just beautiful. In North Vancouver, 5-course meal, totally decadent. And so I guess inspired by that, we're starting up another supper. Tim and I are hosting what we're calling Plate Invaders. It's Vancouver's newest cruelty-free restaurant, underground, of course, shush, shush. So on Saturday is our first night, and we're having a 4-course meal, I think, in 2 seatings. We'll start with the seared watermelon salad, and also a tomato risotto and a delicious yellow plum sorbet with lots of extra fancy goodies. That's just a little hint. And yeah, I just wanted to give a shout out to other underground vegan meal events. I know that Mallory and Kaylee were running, under the name Vegan Mischief, were running a vegan brunch.
Yeah, those were really
Saturdays.
Popular.
Yeah, they were. They're actually That team has parted ways, and now the brunch is on hold for the next few months at least. So that's news. And then there's actually another Vancouver Vegan Supper around Commercial Drive by a fellow named David. And on Saturday, September 8th, he'll be hosting a soul food meal, corn-battered, cheese-stuffed jalapenos, fried chicken, grits, and cornbread, and a marshmallow yam pie. So yeah, there's lots going on in Vancouver. So that's pretty much my secret supper news and secret brunch.
I'm excited about that. I don't think I'm going to make it this week, but hopefully you're going to do another one because I want to go.
Awesome. Well, I hope we can make it. I just wanted to mention just sort of what I did a bit yesterday because I thought that would be interesting to our listeners. So I went to the P&E. I go every year with my grandmother. And last year I did a little feature on sort of what the Razzle Dazzle show that the P&E puts on in their big red barn.
Pacific National Exhibition. Lots of farm animals.
Yeah, anyway, the farm animals are just one part of what's offered there, and it's sponsored by Safeway, this big red barn housing lots of animals from llamas and sheep to horses and cows and bunnies and all kinds of birds and stuff. So I went there with my grandmother yesterday, and this time I did not forget to bring some pamphlets because I think it's a good outreach opportunity, so I just brought about 30. I was with my grandma, so I didn't want to, you know, waste too much of her time, but I thought it was really important, and I just kind of handed out a lot of leaflets there and talked to people about what goes on in farms that is not shown at the big red barn there. And I think that was really important. It felt really good, and I think I opened up a few people's eyes.
Good for you.
So, yeah, I really want to go back again and spend a longer time there.
So were you outside of the barn, or in
I was inside,
right in like front of the pigs,
petting,
and being like,
petting
here,
the baby cows.
Here, see where your bacon comes from.
Yeah. And if the baby cow was a male, I'd be like, you know, what happens to this male in the dairy industry? They're slaughtered right away. So
there were some very disturbing articles recently on the 4-H programs
really?
In the newspaper. Oh, that is so sad to read.
Yeah,
how people destroy their compassion.
Yeah, I
know. We should do a show on that.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. That would be interesting. And then I just wanted to say I got home last night from the P&E with my grandma just in time to catch The Nature of Things, David Suzuki's program here, Canadian show, and it was called Mysteries of the Animal Mind, and it was amazing. It was so good. I just have to highly, highly recommend it to everyone. It is available free online. You can just
for Canadians
Google The Nature of Things and check out Mysteries of the Animal Mind. What it is just it highlights a whole bunch of different studies that show more in depth of what's going on in terms of feelings of animals, compassion and empathy, intelligence, cooperation, altruism, and even justice and moral considerations. It showed dolphins looking into the mirror for the first time and the stages they go through, yeah, recognizing that it's actually them, and then they check out, you know, their teeth and what they look like, and they're just one of the few animals who can recognize themselves in a mirror. And then there was studies of bonobos showing that they would readily share their food even with strangers, like stranger bonobos that they never met before. They would just, you know, unlock the gate and help them have access to the food, and elephants solving puzzles. And I just wanted to say that it really did have a refreshingly anti-speciesist conclusion, and it pointed to the fact that humankind is certainly not superior in the way that we have thought for so long, and how popular science sort of generally refers to animals as robots. That was not present in this documentary, and I think it was really kind of groundbreaking. I did note, actually, just last week I learned that in July of this year there was a Cambridge symposium that led to the signing of a declaration that non-humans are conscious, mm-hmm, and that was leading scientists who had just noted that, there was a whole weekend of workshops and stuff, and they ended with this big signing that consciousness exists in other animals. So I thought that was pretty awesome. And I just wanted to mention that we are looking for a someone else to join our team here at Animal Voices. We're seeking a new programmer and co-host to join our volunteer collective. No experience is necessary, but certainly some skills and abilities and qualities that make for an excellent programmer and co-host, such as presentation and speaking, public speaking skills, and ability time management is important for radio. Eager to engage in discussions. If you find you have just so much to say and you're, you know, chewing the ear of all your friends, you maybe need an outlet, and maybe radio is that outlet for you. So we encourage you to contact us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, and we can discuss further from there. And that's about
it. Radio is moving further to the left. Not that way. This way. Starting September 10th, be sure to turn your dial further to the left to 100.5 FM to tune in Co-op Radio. It'll be a stronger signal and in stereo, but it will be the same Co-op Radio we've always been. The same public affairs programming that gives a voice to the voiceless. The same music programming you won't hear on mainstream radio. We'll just be a little further to the left, that's all. Further to the left on the dial. Remember, on September 10th, Vancouver Co-op Radio moves to 100.5 FM. Be sure you're there with us. Don't be left behind. On the right.
You are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here currently on 102.7 FM and in the future to be on 100.5 FM. CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. I just, for our events, I just wanted to talk about an event that we'll be having presented by Animal Voices and the Raw BC Society, which is happening on Sunday, September the 9th. I know you chatted a bit about it last week on the show, but we want to give it ample PR. This is end of summer beach potluck that we're having at the Trout Lake Park. We're having it at the south end of the park at 5:30 p.m. at the large undercovered picnic area. The entrance is at East 19th Avenue and BC Parkway. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and Lissa and Elon and I are currently planning this. So we just really want to do this as a chance to get all together and build communities and eat really good vegan food, raw food as well. Raw food is encouraged to bring that. Everyone's invited to attend, and we do encourage an environment that is welcoming and respectful of people of all eating lifestyles, sexual orientation, shapes and sizes, and ages. This is a family-friendly event, and it's also an animal-friendly event, of course. So we ask that each person brings a vegan dish to serve 8 people, free of all animal products, and along with a serving utensil, plus a plate, cup, and cutlery for your own meal. Also, if you could bring an ingredients dish list for your dish, that would be very helpful, and be sure to note whether it's a raw dish. We'll have an area of our tables that'll be just for the raw food. As I said, bring in raw is encouraged, but not necessary. Also, if you don't have time to prepare a dish, we suggest that you bring some fresh fruit, which is always enjoyed in the summertime. I actually attended a large potluck last month, and a lot of people brought fruit, and it was all eaten up. So, as I said, people like that, especially in the summer. Also, if you just don't have time or money to make any food, no problem, just come anyways. We just want people to come and enjoy themselves and enjoy some plant-based food with some like-minded people. We will have the whole covered area booked, which seats 50, but we're told that the whole area, it's 150, is that right, Alyssa?
There's a lot of grass space.
I guess, so
bring a blanket.
Bring a chair in case there's overflow into the grass. We did have a similar end of summer potluck last year at Trout Lake Park, and it brought a lot of people. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. If you want, bring a musical instrument, frisbees, balls, etc., anything that people might want to join in with. And the event is weather dependent, so in the case of bad weather. In case it rains, we will reschedule to the following Sunday. If you have any questions about this, you can email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Oh, we're also going to have a raffle there, which I'd forgotten to mention. So lots of great prizes, and the funds will go to Animal Voices.
So on last week's Animal Voices show, I featured an interview with Marineland Animal Defense. And I'm sure most of us have probably heard there's been quite a media buzz around Marineland, which is one of Canada's premier theme parks located in Niagara Falls, Ontario. So last Wednesday of last week, there was a big article where 8 former staffers spoke out about the terrible conditions at the park, the understaffing, and the really bad water quality that was leading to terrible eye problems and skin problems in many of the animals. There's a lot of animals there. Walruses, belugas, dolphins, a killer whale, and including bear and deers as well. So what has happened since then? A whole lot. There was follow-up articles. One article in the Toronto Star from sort of Marineland defending the park and the care there. The veterinarian, June Mergel, said that the allegations were without context, that the problems were due to old age, and that caring for the animals is always a balancing act. And then another article followed in which the former staffers said they were sickened by the park's explanations. Brendan Kelly, who was the MC at the stadium show, quit last week, and his accounts were highlighted in that follow-up article. And actually, yesterday morning, 8 inspectors spent almost 3 hours at the theme park investigating marine mammals and their enclosures. This investigation is in part by the Niagara Falls Humane Society, the Ontario Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, and CASA, which is the Canadian Association of Zoos and Aquariums. And that is a privately funded group and self-regulated. There's really not much. There's no laws actually, federally or provincially, for marine mammals and or animal parks. Well, in Ontario specifically as well. So they have finished the initial investigation. No official statement has been released, although Marineland, of course, says that they have found no major issues. So just wanted to update on that.
Thanks a lot for that, Alyssa. Denise and I was away when all this was happening. I think Denise might have been back in town, so it was a bit out of the loop.
Oh, but I forgot to mention they had an amazing demonstration on Saturday where over 500 people showed up. That was huge.
That's fantastic that it's getting so much press. So it has been a few weeks now since I returned from my 2012 summer vegan vacation, and most of that vacation was 10 days that was spent in the Washington, D.C. area, where Denise, our friend Leslie, and I attended the Taking Action for Animals conference presented by the Humane Society of the United States, and that was held from July 27th to 29th. Following that, Denise and I stayed in D.C. and explored the city a bit until later the following week, when we then took a taxi ride across the big city to Alexandria, Virginia, to attend what is always a highlight for me in my life, and that is the annual National Animal Rights Conference, a 4-day chock-full activist event presented by the Farm Animal Rights Movement. Preceding the two conferences, we actually flew into New York City first because we basically just wanted to explore and discover the sights and tastes that New York City has to offer. I think we got enough to eat there, didn't we, Denise?
Oh, Lord.
I want to talk about that maybe next week on the show, actually, but that's a whole nother show. After the two conferences, I was fully vacationed out, and I wanted to go home, and Denise was lucky enough to be able to get back to Vancouver, whereas I grudgingly had to go to Ottawa to endure 7 long, hot, and rainy days working there for a week. So now I'm finally back, and we wanted to share with you our reviews of the Taking Action for Animals conference and the AR conference, which I would say are two of the premier conferences to attend for animal advocates. This was my first time, and Denise's first time as well, attending the Taking Action for Animals conference, which has been happening since about 2005, I believe it is. And as I mentioned, presented by the Humane Society of the United States, which means that they had a lot of their own staff to draw from as speakers for the conference, since some of the most well-versed and well-spoken, for that matter, animal advocates on the continent happened to work for the HSUS. For example, there was Jonathan Balcombe, who is the department chair of Animal Studies at Humane Society University, and he gave an engaging presentation on the inner lives of animals. We've actually had him on the show before speaking on a similar subject. Dr. Michael Greger and Paul Shapiro from HSUS, along with Jean Bauer from Farm Sanctuary, each gave excellent presentations on the plight of farm animals in North America and what's being done on their behalf. And of course, there was Wayne Pacelli as well, the president of HSUS. He gave a talk on the Saturday at the Saturday night banquet dinner. I also got to meet him. Did you get to meet him?
No.
Oh, okay. So, tall guy. And very good looking as well. So to give you an idea of the scheduling of how the event went, the main part of the conference began on the Friday evening with a reception and then screening of a film called Madonna of the Mills, which is about a woman who saves dogs from puppy mills. It then continued on into the weekend with plenary sessions on the Saturday morning and Sunday evening, a banquet dinner on the Saturday evening, and then the various workshops in between. So apart from the sessions I already mentioned, other highlights of the conference for me included getting to see and meet Kathy Freston for the first time. Also seeing Jane Velez Mitchell speak again was awesome. She is such a vibrant and powerful presence to be around, and she does such amazing advocacy work for the animals. And because I like them so much, we'll be hearing clips from both of their plenary talks later on in the show. And Denise, I'm curious to know, because we haven't really chatted since we've emailed a bit back and forth, but we haven't really decompressed our thoughts about the conferences since we've returned in that. So what were your highlights of the conference for you?
Well, for TAFA, I thought that was a very well-run conference. I was really impressed. And it was well-paced, too. You had, you know, breathing space in between each
unlike the next
session.
Conference we went to.
Well,
which can be good and bad, you know.
Yeah, both are good in a way. You want to get in as much as possible, mm-hmm. but, yeah, you want to survive as well.
But
I thought that film Madonna of the Mills on the puppy mills was really good. I would really recommend that. If you can get that online, can't you?
I don't know. I haven't tried.
I have a feeling
some things
that
are easier
can.
To get in the States in the United States from here. They have Hulu. Remember I taught you about Hulu.
Oh,
you can see
right.
anything on there.
Yeah.
We don't have that here yet. Yeah. So that was well done.
Yeah. And I think my favorite session as always was Jonathan Balcom, because he talks about the inner lives of animals, and it's really, to me, it's that rich inner life of these beings that we co-evolved with that is what this is all about. Why do we want to protect them? Because they have this rich inner life, and he's so adept at discussing this. And I just discovered rediscovered his blog today. It's onegreenplanet.org, and I would really recommend having a look at that. And I would also really recommend reading any of his three main books, which the one that I've read from cover to cover is called Pleasurable Kingdom.
It's got the cutest picture on it.
Yeah, and pigs, yeah. And he's one of the guys, one of the few ethologists who has spent time discussing not only the suffering of animals, but what is good about their lives, why they deserve to have their lives, how the pleasure that they experience.
And as you said, I think it is important to cover issues such as this at a conference such as this, which I felt overall that the conference was fairly well balanced. Did you find that in terms of the different, HSUS covers all animal issues, all animal issues.
And it's amazing they could get that all in on one weekend.
Right. It was a two-day conference.
Yeah.
2 days, one evening.
Extraordinary.
Yeah. Apart from getting to see and meet some extraordinary animal activists, another highlight of the conference for me was actually the food. I actually really enjoyed the food. I don't know about you. I can't remember what you said. It's sort of a
they
jumbled
did
up
an
in my
amazing
brain.
Job. Absolutely
okay.
amazing. Like the
you
banquet
liked it too.
In particular was really memorable. It was like Whole Foods. It was a ton of vegetables. It was very healthy, and it was extremely well executed.
And what I liked that the cost of the lunch and the two lunches and one dinner was included into the cost.
Yes,
so
and that made the whole thing
good.
Very reasonable,
and really easy to do. Yeah. So, I wanted to also mention that they also had the large room that you could peruse, which with all the different nonprofits in it. A lot of them were subsections of the Humane Society, and then lots of other nonprofit groups. There was lots of free time, as you had said, to actually go in there and look around and check things out. Examples of some of the other workshops were best media practices for effective outreach, winning single issue campaigns, social media for advocates, fighting fur from within, fighting animal cruelty worldwide, and advancing wildlife policy in your backyard. So there was just really a large array of different options to choose from. And then just quickly wanted to mention that on the Monday after the weekend, it was a lobby day. I'll just put that out there for the Americans out there. It doesn't mean anything to us Canadians because we don't have anyone to lobby when you're in the States. So after the Sunday evening, we hung out in Washington, D.C. for 3 days before moving on to the hotel that the Animal Rights Conference was happening in. We did see some sightseeing in those 3 days. We did some sightseeing. We did a lot of eating. And we also had an adventurous day trying to get to a kind of, but not really, nearby animal sanctuary in Maryland called Poplar Springs. And I'd love to talk more about that another time on the show. It was just an amazing rescue haven for the animals, and I'm glad we actually made it there.
It was lovely.
Yeah, to say the least. One of my favorite sanctuaries I've ever visited. The annual Animal Rights Conference is held every summer, usually alternating between Los Angeles and the D.C. area, which presumably allows the West Coast people to attend more easily in the years when it's in LA, and then the East Coast people in the other years. I find it to be a very worthwhile event to attend, but I've always only attended the conference every second year in LA due to cost. This year, however, I really made it a priority to make it happen, and we were thus able to make it DC. That was thanks to you and Leslie. We basically all chipped in and shared the costs and made it somewhat affordable, but it's so worthwhile. The AR conference, as it's more commonly called, went from August 2nd to 5th this year, starting out on a Thursday evening with the reception and plenary talk, and concluding on the Sunday evening with the optional lobby day once again on the Monday. The AR conference is always an event that is just packed full of activity, and year after year, I find it really difficult to not want to participate in the offered workshops, plenaries, and other activities on every hour of every day. I mean, they even start off the day first thing in the morning with morning exercise, and you even attend. Did you attend yoga?
I did go to one of the yoga sessions.
Good for you. And there's workshops all day long until dinner time, and then the evening plenary commences, and then there's even a networking reception after that if you want to stay up really late. And this conference also does a Saturday evening banquet dinner with awards presentations given to well-deserving AR activists in various categories. And this year they actually even had something new, which was a Sunday night party with karaoke, and that was fun. So while the vegan meals provided by the hotel are at additional cost, there's also lots of free food there provided by the conference organizers, which is appreciated for sure. So, and then there's also the big vendor room table there with vendors / various nonprofits. And usually, you know, they have about 90 different tables in there. So it's a really great place. Did you buy your button that I saw today from there?
Yes, I bought buttons.
Because you can buy buttons there you can't find anywhere else.
I bought a really unique necklace as well.
I'm wearing the necklace I bought.
And you bought one there too, eh?
Yes. So, yeah, it's just really a really wonderful and amazing event to attend. What were some of the highlights of the conference for you, Denise?
Well, I really liked the way that FARM presents a wide diversity of tactics, that they're able to encompass that all. And at that particular conference, they always have a lot on the psychology of influencing people that I find really interesting. Nick Cooney.
Melanie Joy.
Spoke, and Melanie Joy and Alex Hershaft of FARM on psychology. And I really recommend Nick Cooney's book called Change of Heart, What Psychology Can Teach Us About Spreading Social Change.
We had him on the show not too long ago to speak about that.
Yeah, and Melanie Joy gave a couple of sessions, one on carnism, an introduction to carnism based on her
book.
And
we've actually, what's the name of the book?
Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows, An Introduction to Carnism.
And I just wanted to mention that there were over 70 speakers at this year's AAR conference, and many of the people have been on our show before. I won't list them because we're running out of time, but just want to say that the AAR conference, it's such a great meeting ground for all animal advocates, especially all the really main people in the AAR community that are really making a difference, to all come together and share ideas, learn from each other, make friends, and take back with us the knowledge and new connections that we can use in the future in our work for the animals, whether it's just to be more personally empowered with up-to-date and accurate information, or whether it's to launch huge campaigns with ideas that you've learned from the conference to protect the animals, or anything in between that. So, it's a priority for me to attend the conference every year, and I'm going to continue to try to make it happen. And I just wanted to mention that next year's AAR conference will be in D.C. again. They're not alternating this time, but then the TAFA conference won't be happening now again until 2014, and I believe that'll be in D.C. as well. So that was our review of the two conferences.
You are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 102.7 FM CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Events coming up. First of all, BC Liberation will be having their...
Liberation BC.
Oh, I'm sorry. Liberation BC. Oh, I was just reading something else the other way around. Anyway, yes, they're having their monthly volunteer night this coming Tuesday, August 28th at 6:15 at Mount Pleasant Community Center, which is number 1 Kingsway near Main Street.
Do you go to those sometimes, Denise?
I do sometimes. I haven't been for a while, but this coming one will be important because... they are going to be preparing for the Walk for Farm Animals, which
September
is on...
September 29th.
Yes, September 29th, Saturday. They'll be making signs, and as always, there will be yummy vegan snacks for everybody, and all of the materials will be provided. And if you have not yet registered for a Walk for Farm Animals, please do so. You can go to walkforfarmanimals.org. to register.
And they have them at all different cities all over the continent, actually,
yes.
We should mention. So we have them here in Vancouver, all over, but in all cities. And we'll be having, I think, another really great walk. So September
yes.
29th would be the local one, but they have them on different dates in other
yes.
parts of the country. That's actually all the time we have for events, but we've got some news, Melissa.
Okay. Just one little piece of news I wanted to share. Slaughterhouse was in California was shut down this week due to allegations of animal cruelty. What isn't a slaughterhouse about animal cruelty?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. But anyway.
Animal cruelty that was put on TV.
Yes.
Let's call it that.
Yes.
That people got to see.
Mm-hmm. So last week, undercover footage released by Compassion Over Killing, a group in the U.S., revealed some disturbing things, and Central Valley Meat Company was shut down, and I think it's still shut down, but it's probably just temporary. They're just undergoing an investigation. Central Valley Meat Company is a slaughterhouse where spent cows are killed, and spent cows are those that are deemed no longer profitable by the dairy industry. And that's just after maybe 5 years and a few babies taken from them. And the footage from Revealed showed some animals with swollen udders who couldn't stand. And this is of interest to the United States Department of Agriculture because there's a federal regulations against processing downed cows due to health concerns. After the video was submitted to the USDA, they started an investigation and closed the plant. In one clip, a cow appears to be conscious and flailing as a conveyor lifts him or her by one leg for transport to an area where the animal's throats are slit for blood draining. The horror caught on camera is sickening, said a spokesperson from Compassion Over Killing. And they say it's a good sign that the USDA is taking it seriously, but they want to see what comes next. And
I just wanted to say that this aired as a news story a few nights ago on ABC News by Diane Sawyer.
Yep. Okay. A spokesperson from the American Meat Institute said that the narration misleads the viewer into believing that these animals are conscious when they're not. Hmm. And they said the meat industry has demonstrated commitment to handling animals humanely. In and out McDonald's Corporation, Jack in the Box, and Burger King, and other chains have quickly cut ties with Central Valley Meat Company. They are no longer using them as a supplier because of the bad press. And that's...
They might just use another one until that other company gets bad press.
Well, exactly. What I mean, this is...
It's not changing things. It's not making things better for animals when you just go to another supplier that has the same practices.
Exactly. And then an undercover investigator will have to get into that one, and then that'll be exposed.
Undercover investigators are working overtime.
They'll start just renaming their companies and just, you know, kind of... It's just all the same thing. That'll be found at every slaughterhouse, not animals. Are not killed on the conveyor belt. Some are still conscious. The idea is that there's a captive bolt and that renders them unconscious, but that is not always the case.
This is to be continued, for sure. I'm sure we'll be talking about this again. So as we spoke about earlier in the show, back to the TAFA and AIR conferences, there were just so many excellent top-level and expertly informed speakers at both the Taking Action for Animals and Animal Rights conferences held at the end of July and early August this month, and it would be remiss of me not to bring back a taste of the presenters that I experienced there for you.
A taste of a
vegan taste, a non-dairy, non-meat, non-egg taste.
Delicious.
So you're going to hear some of this for yourself. Given the time constraints of the show, I have for you just three audio clips of three of the speakers that I especially enjoyed. I think Denise really liked them as well.
I did enjoy them.
Yeah. So this is three out of many excellent speakers. Part of the reason that I have chosen these three is because we haven't featured them on the show before. And other than that, it's really just a random sampling of what you would have heard at the conferences. There were just so many great speakers. Our first clip is by a person in the AR world who really needs no introduction, and that is Kathy Freston, author of vegan lifestyle books such as Quantum Wellness, Veganist, and most recently, The Lean. She was featured on Oprah's Big Vegan Show a few years ago, if you remember that, where the Oprah staff went vegan for 3 weeks, and she was their guide, their guru into the lifestyle. And she's been on lots of other TV shows since then as well, such as Martha Stewart and The Ellen DeGeneres Show. People know her because she is on TV, and with her approachable method, she is really effective in getting the word out there about compassionate living. And I actually just happened to see her on an Ellen rerun a couple days ago, in fact, which was awesome because I found she was just like she is in real life. And yes, I did get to meet her at the TAFA conference. She is really tall. She's 6'1", and she wears heels. So she likes to do her speaking presentations in the form of a talk show-like interview. And in this audio clip, we have HSUS's Paul Shapiro asking her to tell her story of transformation to a compassionate lifestyle for the animals. So here is that clip.
As I was telling Martha Stewart, I was playing with my dog one day, my little chihuahua, and I was rubbing her belly. I was like, oh my god, this dog is so cute. I love animals so much. And a voice in my head said, well, why are you eating them? You know, and I started thinking about it. I thought, well, here's this cute little dog, and if you've ever seen a lamb or a chicken or a little pig up close, they're so cute too. And so I started thinking, all right, what if she were a food animal? Because there was really no difference in intelligence or awareness or anything like that. So my little chihuahua, what if she were a closed, cramped situation, and she was smelling all this ammonia and fear and everything and had very unnatural surroundings, and what if she were then marched off to slaughter and hung up by her leg and everything. And so I really just put her in the position of what these animals went through. And I was, of course, horrified. We love her animal. It's like your child. So I thought, oh my God, the only difference between her and any other food farm animal is that I know her. And so the light bulb went off, with the brochure and my own calling myself out on hypocrisy of what I was doing and this little dog. So that's when the light bulb went off. I just wanted to be someone who was not participating in what I was coming to see was kind of a horror, But I didn't know how to do that, so I thought, I'm just going to set my intention. This is what I've done throughout my life with anything, whether it's getting out of bed, or, you know, starting a new career or whatever. It's just I'm going to set my intention and I'm going to nudge myself forward and I'm going to lean into it. And so I wanted to be someone who didn't eat animals. That was my intention. And then I just nudged myself forward. And the way that I did that is I started, you know, looking around at foods that were different than animal foods and starting to try different recipes. And I eliminated eating one animal at a time. I started with eliminating cows. You know, now if I'm looking at it from a consciousness point of view, I would have said start with eliminating chicken because in units of suffering, you know, I don't know how many people can eat a cow, but chickens are so much smaller, so there's so much more suffering. But I just leaned into it, and over the course of probably a year and a half, 2 years, I became vegetarian and then vegan.
And so has your transformation in your own life influenced them as well, your friends or your family?
Yeah, a lot, you know. And I think that it's because I haven't pushed. I love sharing information because for me, that's what's fascinating. Like, oh my God, I can halt the growth of cancer? What? You know, that's so empowering. Oh my God, I can be a serious environmentalist by not eating animals. So all these things that I was learning was so exciting because, you know, when I started off in this direction of not eating meat, dairy, or eggs, I thought, well, I'm going to gain weight because we all know you need animal protein if you want to stay lean and strong, you know, like Dr. Atkins said. And
he's very lean and strong.
Yeah, exactly. It's a radical change.
Not leanness or strongness.
Yeah. Kind of chunky and not so healthy looking. And so I had these beliefs and I thought, oh my God, I'm going to die 10 years earlier because, you know, I'm not going to be getting a full rich diet. So as I started reading the science, the abundant science, and the really peer-reviewed gold standard science that was saying not only do you lose weight and you keep it off, you prevent diseases and reverse them, you're a great environmentalist. I got so excited. And that's just my way that I want to share information in an excited way. And so I'm a big believer in encouraging progress, not perfection. Because we all have our path, we all have our speed, we all have the things that light us up, the things that stop us. And I think that if we as ambassadors for animals embody kindness, and that's what we're talking about, is a kinder world, a more compassionate world, then that should be our way no matter what.
So that was Kathy Freston, and I just really like how she talks about the light bulb going off, which is, and she says she called herself out on her hypocrisy. I think this is something that everyone can relate to. I mean, would you agree with that?
Well, it's funny how that happens, because you can get that information many, many times, but something makes that light bulb
right.
go on.
She said
at
for
one
her it was
time.
A really long process.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the sort of drop in the bucket thing.
Yeah.
Like it just adds up, and then there's a tipping point.
Yeah.
That's it.
You know, it's different, and it's different for some people. Some people get it right away. Their tipping point is like, oh my gosh, I just saw Earthlings, I'm going vegan, and they stay vegan forever. Other people, for her, I think she said it took her like 10 years, and Paul Shapiro asked her, well, what would you tell Kathy back then? And she would say, I would tell myself to hurry up, you know? You save some animals. Like, you think about all the animals that you weren't saving over the course of time that it took you to transform, right? So, I also like what she says about how going vegan gives you personal empowerment because you're living your values. You're being true to yourself, and therefore you're conducting yourself in life knowing that you are living with the morals and values that you believe in. That's what personal empowerment is. So,
and that's what Alex Hirschhoff was talking about during his session at AR, that people strive to reconcile their feelings, beliefs, and actions.
They do. I don't know if everyone does. See, I think the tipping point is when they reach that tipping point, they're like, oh my gosh, I have to live how I believe.
People want to be comfortable with themselves, and if they sense there's a conflict there, but
then they might. Then that's, I think, when people just block it out of their minds and don't want to know.
Yeah, either that or hopefully the reconciliation.
Well, another person in animal rights activists who I'm really in love with for the person who she is and not being afraid to speak the truth in front of millions of people is Jane Velez Mitchell. If you watch TV or are connected in the animal rights world, you'll know her as the very outspoken voice for the animals, who hosts a show on the HLN network called Issues with Jane Velez Mitchell, which covers a variety of current events issues, and she regularly and frequently uses this platform to educate her millions of mainstream viewers about so many of the atrocities that are happening to animals. And for this, I truly admire her as an activist, because it's not that many people who are in such a position to use their media power to communicate with the public and on a regular basis. Her television show is a primary tool for her activism, like none other than we have ever seen utilized. She has also written several books, and I highly recommend reading her book called I Want, which is, did I tell you about that?
Did.
I told you I want
to
lend it to you. I'm
going to
lend it to you. It's a memoir of her life story and her struggles, and it also includes a chapter on her personal transformation to becoming a vegan and animal rights activists. It's really a fantastic read and will allow you to understand a lot more where she's coming from and who she is on a deeper level. Being a public speaker and used to the limelight, Jane Velez Mitchell was a perfect choice for another one of the keynote speakers at the TAFA conference. And I am pleased to be able to share with you an audio clip from the talk that she gave, which was very inspiring and powerful. This clip is from the Q&A section, where an audience member asked her how to answer people who insist that we need to be concerning ourselves with human issues rather than animal issues.
Animal issues are human issues. That is another big fallacy. This fallacy that, well, you care about animals, why don't you care about people? I care about starvation. I care that every 5 seconds a child somewhere around the world dies of malnutrition because they don't have a piece of grain to put in their mouths. And I know that if all the grain that was put into beef and pork and chicken were more equitably distributed, we could end world starvation. Because of the energy it takes to produce the corn and the soy and all the foodstuffs that is fed to the animals, the transportation involved of those items to the location where the animals eat, the transportation of the animals, and let's not forget the methane that the animals themselves produce. Not to mention the runoff of their feces that goes into our ecosystem. So again, the fact that environmental groups do not have a plant-based diet platform is pretty outrageous.
Yes. Yeah.
And again, it's something that they have to act on. I know that things have changed tremendously since former President Bill Clinton essentially went vegan. Sanjay Gupta did an entire hour special sort of revolving around that, but taking a look at the health issues with the skyrocketing cases that are related to diet in terms of, you know, here's the other thing, you care about people, we're in a deficit crisis. This is something that fiscal conservatives should be looking at. One of the underlying causes of our skyrocketing deficit is the ballooning healthcare costs that are very much tied to the skyrocketing obesity rates and all the other attendant health care issues. The operations to put stents in are hugely expensive. And that is all being borne by people who are actually healthy or subsidizing that. So there were so many human issues. This is a human issue. In the old days of man versus nature are over. We're all on the same side, and we're all going to go down together if we don't do something about all these problems.
That was Jane Velez Mitchell. I really like how she puts it out there. Animal issues are human issues. We all know that, right? And she's just very frank. That is the type of voice that she uses on her show, definitely. So finally, I just wanted to highlight a presenter who spoke at the AR conference. And the AR conference had dozens upon dozens of amazing speakers, and it's impossible to choose even a handful of who were the best because so many of them were just so good. But one that I'd like to share with you is Peter Hammerstedt, who is a key volunteer of the Sea Shepherd Society and who may be most famously known as being featured on the Whale Wars television series, where he runs the Bob Barker ship that annually goes to the Antarctica to save the whales from the illegal Japanese whale hunt. I like Peter because he's a young man who has accomplished so much already for the animals, playing a central role in literally saving hundreds and hundreds of whales year after year through risking his life. He is also an engaging speaker, as you'll hear by this story that he told at the conference about his part in helping to end the Canadian seal hunt.
I first got involved in trying to stop the Canadian seal hunt in 2005. Myself and several crew members, there were about 11 of us, were arrested on the ice. And in Canada, it's unlawful to be within half a nautical mile of the seal hunt. It's about 926 meters. And the reason for that is that the Canadian government had something to hide. They did not want people to go out and get video footage of the fact that 62% of these baby harp seals, these 4 to 6 week old pups, were being skinned while still alive. And so the Canadian government passed this legislation called, ironically, the Seal Protection Act, which was really the Sealer Protection Act. And Sea Shepherd would go up year after year along with a number of other groups to try to get that footage out. In 2008, we were really at a turning point, and that turning point was that we, along with many other groups, knew that the European Parliament was considering banning the importation of all seal skin. And Captain Paul Watson knew that the one thing Sea Shepherd is very good at doing is attracting an incredible amount of media attention on the issues. And thankfully, we had this rust bucket of a boat. I mean, this dreadful North Sea trawler that could only do about 9 knots on a very, very good day. And we really needed to retire this ship. And retiring a ship is very, very expensive. It costs hundreds of thousands of dollars to scrap the boat. And Captain Paul Watson decided what better way to get rid of it than let the Canadian government get rid of it for us. And not only that, what better way but to have them scrap it for us too. And in the meanwhile, end the seal hunt while doing it. So Captain Paul Watson asked myself and Captain Alex Cornelson whether we would take the ship up to the ice floes of Canada and get the ship arrested. I figured it wouldn't be that hard to do. And I asked Captain Paul, I said, well, what do you want us to do? We're going to get up there. There's going to be, a Canadian Coast Guard boat. They're going to tell us you've got to keep half a nautical mile away. Well, what do you want us to tell them when that happens? And Paul thought about it for a little bit, and then he said, well, you tell them like in the Western movies. The Western movies, they say, we don't need no stinking bad news. So tell them you don't need no stinking permits. 4 days later, we're in the ice floes of Canada. There's a bunch of these barbarian, these bloodthirsty seal clubbers out on the ice. We're circling them with our rust bucket vessel. The ice is breaking underneath their feet. Cameras are rolling. And these sealers retreat onto the vessel. These seals that are in that area right there were safe simply because we showed up and because we were there. Lo and behold, a call came that we expected, although it wasn't one Canadian Coast Guard vessel. There were two Canadian Coast Guard icebreakers, one naval vessel, two Canadian Coast Guard helicopters, a plane from the Department of Fisheries and Oceans, and a plane from the Canadian Coast Guard as well. All to get these vegans and vegetarians on this really slow boat with their cameras. But I knew we were being effective. And so the call came. I heard it on the Marine VHF channel 16. I hear Farley Miller, this is the Canadian Coast Guard vessel George R. Perks. You are instructed to keep half a nautical mile away at all times. So I'm thinking, what did Paul tell me in Bermuda? So I answer and I say, George R. Perks, this is the Farley Miller. We are a Dutch flag vessel. We are in international waters. To be frank, sir, we don't need no stinking permits. I mean, they knew who I was. Here I was, this 21-year-old kid, but he must have been like the Wizard of Oz, because he was his brother telling this big vessel telling him that we weren't going to move. So they reply back after about 30 seconds. They say, all right, sir, we're going to have to let you know you're currently in violation of the Seal Protection Act, and we're going to have to take enforcement action against you. So I reply back, and I say, well, the only crime here is a crime against nature, the brutal slaughter of the harp seal, and we have every right to be. And then started the waiting game. And what we did, we had 19 crew on board, we had a tally on the board in the mess, and every day we had a yes folder and a no folder. And we tried to take bets on how long it would take for the Royal Canadian Mounted Police to board the vessel. Day one happened, and there were about 5 votes yes that they would board that day, and about 14 votes no. About 5 days later, there were 18 votes yes and my incredibly naive vote no. And half an hour later, a SWAT team of 15 RCMP officers boarded the vessel at gunpoint, seized the vessel, and took Captain Alex Cornelison and myself to jail in Canada. The Minister of Fisheries and Oceans in Canada was getting very proud of himself. He went out in the media and said, you know, what Captain Paul Watson needs to know is that there's a new white urban town. And was subsequently dismissed from office when 2 weeks later, Captain Paul Watson congratulated him on retiring the vessel on our behalf.
That was a great story by Peter Hammerstead, and those were some of the highlights of some notable speakers from the TAFA and AIR conferences for you. I hope you enjoyed them. I've also taken lots of video of other speaker presentations from the conference, and we'll be launching them on our new, yet-to-be-created Animal Voices YouTube channel in hopefully the not-too-distant future. And that was our show for today. You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Next week on the show, we'll be speaking to Vancouver activist and Sea Shepherd volunteer Marley Daviduk about her experiences in being a Cove Guardian at the annual dolphin slaughter in Taiji, Japan this past year, plus some of the other work for the animals that she has been doing. We'll also have for you travel tips and recommendations for compassionate eating in New York City, so tune in next week for that. We here at the Animal Voices show modestly ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices via the World Wide Web. You can do so by signing up for our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. And please do send your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Also, please do check out our website, animalvoices.org. So we are leaving you with a song called Animal Lover by the singer and songwriter Vegan Smythe. Stay tuned now for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
You could travel around the whole of planet Earth, asking every man and woman, boy and girl, but no matter what their race or age or girth, they would answer with these self-same sacred words. I'm an animal lover. I'm an animal lover. And I love my dog so much, as long as he doesn't slobber and sits when I say sit. Woof, woof. I'm an animal lover. And I love my cat so much, as long as she doesn't lose her hair and cover my chair with shit. I'm an animal lover, and I love my bird so much, as long as he doesn't sing too loud and flap around like a twit.
Tweet, tweet!
All my life is so abundant with joy and gaiety, 'cause God's given all these animals to me. I'm an animal lover. I'm an animal lover, and I love my cow so much, as long as she's sliced and cooked just right, never overdone. Moo, moo! I'm an animal lover, and I love my chicken so much, as long as she's mulched and crumbed and fried and served up in a bun.
I'm an animal lover, and I love my pig so much, 'cause ham in a sandwich dearly pleases nearly everyone. Oink! Oh, my life is so abundant with joy and gaiety, 'cause God's given all these animals to me. I'm an animal lover. Sometimes I don't know which way to go, to eat a fish or catch a fish or watch fish in a bowl. Sometimes I don't know which path to take, to pat the roos in the national park or eat a kangaroo steak. I'm an animal lover. I'm an animal lover, that nobody can deny, and I couldn't watch one suffer, it would surely break my heart. I'm an animal lover, I'll sing it to the sky, and I dream of being a vegan, but lentils make me fart. I'm an animal lover, and cruelty makes me cry, but sometimes I'm not sure where loving ends and cruelty starts. Oh, my life is so abundant with joy and gaiety, 'cause God's given all these animals to me. Oh, I'm an animal lover. Yeah, I'm an animal lover. Are you an animal lover?